You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the latest edition of the FWA podcast here with William Hill. Good to have you with us ahead of the Premier League this weekend. Dave Kellner in the studio, and each and every week we're joined by one of the top football journalists in the land. And this week, no different, Dean Jones, the football insider for Bleacher Report, is live and on the line. First of all, good morning to you, Dean.
Morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm very good, very good. Lots of good football to watch recently, so that's all been good.
It has indeed, it has indeed. We'll start with the Champions League, because I've not spoken to anyone on this podcast about the Champions League draw. But it's been a bad week for Arsenal, really. Beaten by Everton and draw by Munich in the Champions League. And it's just sod's law, isn't it, really, Dean, that they eventually, finally finished top of a Champions League group. And because of the way things have worked in this in the competition this season, they draw Bayern Munich.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have been much better, would it, if they'd have come second in the end, because they'd have ended up with Barcelona. But ultimately, Wenger's never clearly going to get past this stage of the Champions League again, because it's just been decided for him that Arsenal are going to get a difficult draw every single time. I don't think it's impossible this time they can beat Bayern, because I think that Arsenal have a real fluidity about them this season. And when you look at teams across Europe, I think Arsenal have been really consistent. And you'd have to say, if you were to judge every team right now in terms of form and performances, Arsenal would probably be in the top three or four across Europe. The problem is, so would Bayern Munich. They've managed to get themselves back to the top of Bundesliga, and I watched them last week against Wolfsburg, and they were outstanding. And they've got so much strength in depth as well. So I think, obviously, this game's a couple of months away yet, but Arsenal have really got their work cut out to make it through.
What do you think to the draws that Manchester City and Leicester got in the competition, Dean?
For Man City, I think, again, because it's 2 months away, it's difficult to judge. But right now, Monaco are just scoring goals for fun. You know, they're literally the most free-scoring team in Europe. Got 50-odd goals so far this season. They've got some really exciting young players. Kylian Mbappe is, you know, he's like a 17-year-old who's been spoken about as the next big thing to come out of Monaco. And that's something that Man City are going to have to worry about if their defence is still playing the way they have been recently. Obviously, by the time this game comes around, there's a chance that City might have signed another defender, which would probably be advisable for them if they want to progress in this tournament or even challenge for the Premier League as well. And as for Leicester, I actually think that that's a pretty good draw for them, having Sevilla. I mean, the only worry I've got for them really is that if they lose to Sevilla, then they've gone through the Champions League and played against four teams and not really had a really mammoth tie that you'd really expect them to have. If you play in the Champions League, you at least want to go to somewhere like the Bernabeu or the New Camp or even Dortmund. And there's just been a little bit of a feel like it's been kind of like Europa League type games so far for them. So I actually really hope Leicester can make it through against Sevilla, because I really want them to get one of the big boys.
The qualification markets here with William Hill have seen dramatic movement since the draw was made. Leicester City were actually 5-4 to beat Sevilla and go through to qualify. They've drifted right out to 7-4 now, Sevilla 2-5. There's also been quite a lot of cash for Monaco as well to knock Manchester City out of the tournament. Monaco opened up 4-1 in the market to get through against Man City. They're into 100-30. Man City still heavily odds on at 1-5 to qualify. And Bayern Munich, as you would expect, Dean, 2-7 to knock Arsenal out. Knocked them out in 2013 and 2014, and Arsenal finished second behind them in the group last year as well. 5-2 Arsenal to qualify in that tie. Which British club do you think will go furthest?
It's a really difficult one. We were talking about this as soon as the draw was made. We were like, which British club do you fancy from here? And I think I'm going to have to say Man City, purely looking at the draw, because I think they will get past Monaco, even though I don't think it's as easy a tie as some people initially thought when the draw was made. Arsenal, obviously, it's very difficult to see them getting through that tie. And Leicester, even if they get past Sevilla, can't really see them getting any further than that point. So I'm going to say that I fancy Man City the most. But actually, to go on and win the tournament, I think it's difficult to look past the two teams in Madrid for me. I think that both Real and Atleti have got ties in the last 16 that they'll win. I think that in Europe, Atleti have looked a lot better than they have done in La Liga. And Real Madrid are just... Zidane's just got something about him. Even if Real Madrid aren't playing well, they're getting results. So I think in terms of winning the actual tournament, you're going to have to beat one of those Spanish teams.
You've picked out two sides there that aren't towards the top of the betting either. Barcelona are 3-1 favourites to win the Champions League. Bayern Munich 7-2. Real Madrid are 9-2. Atletico Madrid 8-1. Man City 9-1. Dortmund 11s. And it's 12-1 and bigger the rest. So a couple of... Not outsiders there, Dean, but a couple of teams away from the two market leaders.
Yeah, definitely. But I find it hard to kind of get behind Barcelona in terms of backing them because they've been quite inconsistent. There's been too many draws in there. But they're definitely not as fluid as they have been in past years. And Luis Enrique definitely got a few questions to answer right now as far as I'm concerned. I think with Messi, obviously, you're always going to have a good chance in the... Suarez and Neymar, so they're obviously not going to be written off. But PSG isn't an easy game for them in the last 16, and it wouldn't completely surprise me if they went out.
Do you think that those front three aren't working as hard as they have done in previous years? Some people saying that Sergio Busquets has been a little bit isolated and it's put real pressure on that back four this season.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to be said for that. I think that... Busquets in past seasons has kind of been taken for granted in Barcelona, and he's been quite unsung. But certainly, once the going gets tough, you start to focus a bit more on that kind of central area of the pitch, the centre backs, and the man in front of them. And I think that Barcelona have really been shown up, if you like, in that area. And I'm just not convinced by them right now. I'm not saying that they're not going to win the tournament because it's Barcelona and. Obviously, they've got the power to do so, but I don't think it's going to be straightforward for them at all.
OK, Dean, that's the Champions League done and dusted. Let's get stuck into the Premier League and get your predictions for the televised games this weekend. And yeah. The weekend starts at Selhurst Park, Dean, with Crystal Palace versus Chelsea. And Palace are 11-2 to win this match. The draw 16-5 with Chelsea. In the market at 1-2. Diego Costa to score and Chelsea to win was 6-5. That's been enhanced to 5-4. And Christian Benteke to score and Crystal Palace to win was 8-1. That's now 10-1. Chelsea unstoppable at the moment, Dean. 10 straight wins in the Premier League. And their win midweek came without Eden Hazard. He didn't travel to Sunderland to the Stadium of Light. And they still won that game 1-0. And they're looking good, Chelsea.
They're looking really good, yeah. I mean, you couldn't have two sides and different kind of confidence right now. Palace, just for me, the worst team of 2016 in the Premier League by far. They've been they've just fallen off a cliff really this year. I know they had a good run in the FA Cup and everything, but ultimately you don't get judged on that because everybody quickly forgets a cup run. And Alan Pardew obviously under pressure right now to keep his job, and this one's certainly not going to help him. Chelsea. Not lost since that Arsenal away defeat a few months ago now. And 10 out of 10 is just an outstanding run of form that Conte's managed to find. And it's just really, really difficult to see this not being a Chelsea win. The way that they're playing, obviously in midweek going away and winning a game. And Diego Costa, for me, just finding a completely new level again this season. I think that when it comes around to Player of the Year at the end of the season, especially if Chelsea have won the title, it's going to be very hard to look beyond him if he continues this kind of form because he's become a much more selfless player. He's working harder for the team. He seems to be in better shape now. He's back scoring goals consistently and he's back to focusing all his attention on taking out his anger on the other team in the right ways rather than the wrong ways. And that's a really important thing that Conte has managed to do with him.
Has the, I mean, a lot has been made about the implementation of the three at the back system that Antonio Conte was known for when he came to the Premier League. Has that been the secret? Has that been the key? Or do you think it's been more Costa and Hazard playing to their absolute optimum in the last three or four months now?
Yeah, I think defensively that's been a huge thing. And I think that when they signed David Luiz, obviously a lot of people laughed, and I was one of them who thought it was a really bad signing. But ultimately, David Luiz has been an absolute revelation back there for Chelsea. And Conte, again, has shown his man-to-man skills by telling Luiz he can't just drift around and take the ball out of defence and be caught out, as we've seen him do too often. And he's been really impressive, and he's brought stability to that back line. Obviously, Terry and Ivanovic are having to watch on while all this is happening, but there's no way that you could doubt the back three that Chelsea have put together there, Cahill and Azpilicueta either side looking good, Azpilicueta getting a new deal on the back of it. And then in front of them, you've got N'Golo Kante. And I think, for me, this just shows the complete quality of N'Golo Kante. Last season, should have been player of the year for Leicester. Should have got it overall. I voted for him. He was everything that was good about Leicester came from N'Golo Kante. His engine, his work rate, but also how clever he was at breaking up play, his passing. And he won Leicester the league. And now Chelsea, he's doing exactly the same thing. If Chelsea win the league this season, you'd have to say, maybe you don't win the league anymore unless you've got N'Golo Kante in your team, because he's making that much of a difference to these sides.
What's the prediction then, Crystal Palace versus Chelsea?
It's going to be a Chelsea win, just a case of how many. I mean, you see Palace last night, they just let Man United keep the ball for extended periods, and I think it'll be the same pace again. I think Chelsea have got a bit more cutting edge than Man United right now, so I'm going to go for a 3-0 Chelsea win.
10-1 Chelsea to win 3-0. Speaking of Manchester United, they travel to the Hawthorns to take on West Brom this weekend. Saturday, 5:30, kick-off here. West Brom 9-2 to win the match. The draw 13-5 with Manchester United 4-6. Enhanced odds, Salomon Rondon to score and West Brom to win was 15-2. That's been enhanced to 8-1. And Wayne Rooney to score and Manchester United to win was 19-10. And now 5-2. Manchester United odds on to win this game. But should they? Because they're taking on one of the informed sides in the Premier League right now in West Brom. 3-1 winners last night against Swansea City. And they've been, I mean, the only team to have beaten them in the last 6 weeks was Chelsea, Dean.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, they're side by side in the table, these two teams. You know, United are sixth, West Brom are seventh. You know, United have been playing well. I do enjoy watching them now and their possession football. And I think that that's kind of, people have been judging Mourinho by saying, oh, you know, he's got a worse record than Moyes and all the rest of it. But actually, progressively, United have been getting a lot better. I think that Pogba has actually been really good in the last four games. I think that that's not been spoken about as much as it should have, because people expect him to be man of the match every week, and that's clearly not going to happen. But Pogba is looking good for me. But say that, and United going to West Brom, and I can't see beyond a draw, to be honest, because I don't think Tony Pulis is going to let his side lose this game. I think he's going to really, really try and frustrate United, as he's done to so many teams before. And I think United, we've seen, find it so hard to break teams down. They just don't have that ruthless streak to them, or haven't had it often enough anyway so far this season. And I think that that's ultimately something that's going to cost them here. I think that they keep so much of the ball, but so many times you're just like, where is that killer pass? And we started to see it with Mkhitaryan, and now that he's obviously picked up an injury, I think that's a concern for Jose Mourinho when it comes to breaking down teams like West Brom, because there's not enough players right now at United showing that kind of X factor to get past their man and create an opportunity.
The draw 13-5 in that match. Is it just the absence of Mkhitaryan, or do Manchester United need something else?
Yeah, it's not just the absence of Mkhitaryan. It's just the fact that I thought he'd really given them that spark that they've been lacking, and I haven't seen it from Martial this season. Just hasn't shown it. He's clearly had a few issues settling properly there in Manchester recently. And Rashford probably not had as many opportunities as he would have liked. And Wan-Mata not lit up the games recently like he did earlier in the season. So Mkhitaryan's loss is a big one for me. But ultimately, you're going to be looking at the kind of Pogba-Ibrahimovic combination if United are to come up with anything here. And I wouldn't rule it out at all, because you see how well those two are on the same wavelength. And when they are, it's very difficult to have any idea what they're going to do. Mm. But So if United are going to win, you'd just be difficult to look behind an Ibra goal. But I think that West Brom, the form that they've been in, the resilience they've got about them, they've been scoring goals as well recently, particularly at home. You know, they beat Swansea, Watford and Burnley in recent times. And I just think that this is a tough game. And actually, coming away with a draw from West Brom wouldn't be the worst result in the world for Man United.
The draw is 13-5. On to Sunday, and we've got Bournemouth versus Southampton, which is televised at 1:30. Bournemouth 15-8 to win this match. The draw 11-5, with Southampton 6-4. Callum Wilson to score and Bournemouth to win was 18-5. That's been enhanced to 5-1. And Dusan Tadic to score and Southampton to win was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 5-1. These two sit side by side in the table, both with 21 points. I've been disappointed with Southampton this season, Dean. I expected them to be higher up the table, in all honesty. And they couldn't break down a 10-man Stoke side on Wednesday night either.
No, they couldn't. Yeah, and you're right. It has been quite frustrating watching Southampton. I've seen them a few times. And there's just not enough consistency about them. There was a spell early on in the season when they managed 4 wins in a row. And you thought, OK, here we go again. Southampton are really going to push on here. But they've stuttered since then. And I'm just not sure that we're going to see enough goals from Southampton anymore, particularly Charlie Austin being out. It's going to be a problem. As you say, they go to Stoke, 10 men for the majority of that game. And they don't manage to find a way through. I think one man I'd really like to see step forward for Southampton is Boufal, now that he's had enough games to kind of settle. You've seen moments of magic from him. And we almost need him to turn into the Tadic of last season, because Tadic doesn't seem to be the same player right now that he was when he was a bit more of an unknown quantity. And I think Boufal still has that about him in the Premier League. Obviously, he cost a lot of money. But Southampton needs somebody like him to really start providing the ammunition for people like Shane Long to score the goals. Obviously, one thing that the Southampton do have in their favour is they've got some good young players coming through, but I'm not sure that an occasion like playing Bournemouth away is one when you want to be relying on kids. So you're going to be looking for your big players to stand up, and Bournemouth in good form. 2 back-to-back wins for them at home that have been very impressive.
Do you think we're seeing it reach its critical mass with Southampton, that conveyor belt method of enhancing a player's or getting the best out of a player, then moving them on, then trying to get another player in that's a young player with talent and working with them and the scouting system being very good? Is that reaching critical mass now, and it's not something that can last forever with Southampton?
Do you know what? I think it actually will last for a long time yet with Southampton. I think that they've got such a good academy there that they have got an incredible conveyor belt of talent, and there's more to come that we haven't even seen yet. Obviously, Sims is the one recently that made an impact. They've also got Harrison Reed, midfielder, that's a really, really good player, and we're going to see more and more of. They've got McQueen. But as I say, it's difficult for these players to make an impact when results aren't great. So you want the team to already have good confidence about them so that you can start to integrate these players and just drop them in one or two at a time. And I just think that, as I say, this South Coast derby is probably not a time for that. So they're going to be relying on their big game players stepping forward for this one, or they're going to get a shock when they get to Bournemouth.
What's the bet here, Dean?
It's a difficult one, but I really wouldn't surprise me to see a Bournemouth win, to be honest. I think that the confidence that they would have taken from turning around that Liverpool game, you shouldn't underestimate that. Obviously, then they went to Burnley and lost, which was a big blow. But then they get straight back to winning ways at home against Leicester. I went to watch Bournemouth earlier on in the season, and I just felt they sat back too much. And this is one worry I had when Jack Wilshere joined Bournemouth. I thought this isn't actually going to help him progress, because Jack Wilshere needs to be on the front foot. He needs to be making things happen. And I thought that he'd spend too much time, on the edge of his own box rather than up the other end. But Bournemouth have gradually started to turn that around. Eddie Howe's shown that he does believe in possession and a certain way of playing, and he's managed to get his team doing that and picking up some wins along the way. I'm not saying they're consistent yet, because it seems they win one, lose one, but I think if they're to really take a step in the right direction, then this is the time to make a statement, and I think that they can do it.
Bournemouth 15-8 to win that game. The big game on Sunday is Manchester City versus Arsenal at the Etihad. 4 p.m. kickoff. Manchester City 11-10, the draw 13-5, and Arsenal 9-4. Enhanced odds: David Silva to score and City to win was 19-5. That's been enhanced to 5-1. And Alexis Sanchez, who's been maybe the star of the season so far, him to score and Arsenal to win was 18-5. That's been enhanced to 5-1 as well. Dean, intriguing match this one. And after Arsenal's defeat against Everton, it was the same old story on Twitter, people saying, oh, same old Arsenal. and you almost forget that that's the first time they've been beaten since the opening day of the season. It's too early for the doom mongers to come out of the woodwork.
It's far too early. And actually, as I mentioned earlier, Arsenal are one of the best teams in Europe this season. There's no doubt about that. When you look across the board and how the other elite teams have been playing, Arsenal, you know, it's hard to find anyone really that's as good as them. And probably Real Madrid is the only team that's been consistently better than Arsenal until recently, when Chelsea went on their 10-game run. I think that Arsene Wenger won't panic right now. I mean, that was obviously a disappointing defeat against Everton, particularly so late on in the game. But he won't lose faith in what he's been managing to do before that point. I mean, you look at their three fixtures before the Everton one: 5-1 against West Ham, 4-1 against Basel, 3-1 against Stoke. They've got goals about them in this team, and obviously it helps that Alexis is in the kind of form that we always hoped he would find. And it seems that in a central role, he's been really important to Arsenal. He's able to not only hold the ball up, but he can also stretch the defence. And I think that's a really important thing that Olivier Giroud doesn't really offer you that, but Giroud is also showing that he can make an impact from the bench. So Arsenal have got so many options. And going to the Etihad, obviously it's a place that nobody looks forward to going to, but there's no better time to be going to play against Man City, because they're just not sure exactly what's happened to themselves. And I don't think anyone really knows what kind of shape, what kind of performance you're going to get from this Man City team right now. I know they've got back to winning ways in midweek, but it was only 2-0, and a game that you'd probably expect them to win 4 or 5 if you'd been watching them 2 months ago. So Arsenal, I think, need to go in this one and just take the game to Man City.
Yeah, I agree. What's happened with Manchester City then? Why are they not performing to the pre-season expectations, I think, is the correct term?
I think Pep Guardiola's got too clever. I think we've seen him do this before. He did it at Barcelona years back, when he starts to get a bit carried away, and that, for me, is kind of what happened. He had such a good start to life in the Premier League, starts to transform the division tactically, and people can't believe some of the things that he's doing, like, you know, his fullbacks tucking around to be central midfielders and all the rest of it. And then suddenly Celtic play Man City, take the game to them, get a draw out of it, and then Tottenham beat them 2-0. And suddenly everybody else is like, oh, hang on, maybe if we don't sit back against Man City and we don't just let them dominate us, then we can get some joy. And ever since, that's been exactly what's been happening. You know, it's only been, I think West Brom are the only team since then to really have been pasted by Man City. And obviously, the thing that he tried at the back against Leicester was an absolute shambles. You can't get that inventive in the Premier League and get away with it, because particularly we've got people like Jamie Vardy playing off your shoulder. So I think Pep needs to just get back to being a bit more basic. And when he does, Man City are going to start clicking again. But I do also think that the loss of Gundogan is a big one for them, because we were starting to see real signs of him and what we've been seeing previously at Dortmund. He was starting to settle. And it's a real, real shame for him if this injury is as bad as it seems.
Do you think Guardiola will do that, though? Because he strikes me as quite a stubborn man.
He's a very stubborn man. Yeah, anyone that's met him and had the stare off Guardiola knows that he's a man that's not going to listen to what anybody else thinks. But I think that the fact that he left Stones out in midweek, he left Sanya on the bench as well. Neither of those players came on against Watford. I think it shows that he's happy to send a message to players so that they know that their place isn't for sure, and if you don't play well, then you're going to lose your spot in the team. And I think that was an important message that he sent out there. So I think that Man City, for me, certainly need another centre-back. I mean, there was obviously the statistic in that Leicester game. They didn't win a tackle until the 35th minute. We did a piece at Bleacher Report the other day, and the fact that everything for Man City in terms of physicality is down this season from when Pellegrini was in charge. There's fewer interceptions, there's fewer tackles in total, fewer tackles per game. And clearly it's not something that Pep puts much importance on, because all he wants to do is see his side keep the ball, keep the ball, keep the ball, and just wear teams out, play these triangle passes, cut the ball back, and then somebody has a tap-in. It's not always that easy. And I think that this Arsenal game is going to be one where they probably won't get away with that either.
It is a huge game with title implications. What's the prediction, Dean?
I think I'm going to go for Arsenal, you know. I think that I think the Everton game was a blip for Arsenal. I've been really impressed by them. I think that there's no better time to go and play Man City. It's going to be a very tight game. I'm not saying that they can go there and win by three, but Arsenal to win by a goal, for me, is actually a really good bet there.
Arsenal to win maybe 1-0 or 2-1. 1-0 is 11-1. 2-1 is 10-1. If you like Arsenal just to win the match, that's 9-4. And Arsenal to win by exactly one goal, that's in the betting at 4-1. Arsenal to win by a goal in the game. Yeah. And we finished the weekend with the Monday night match between Everton and Liverpool, the Merseyside derby. Everton 3-1. The draw 11-4. Liverpool 17-20. No better way to finish a Premier League weekend than this, Dean. And your latest piece for Bleacher Report revolves around Ross Barkley and the story that he's thinking about moving on. And if you saw the images of him, he was almost in tears. I think he might have been in tears on the bench against Manchester United when he didn't get called upon by Ronald Koeman. You might think that maybe now is the time for him to move on, because he seems to have been not ostracised, but isolated by Koeman, even though he did play the other day.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been a disappointing season for Ross Barkley. It was one when Koeman came in, it seemed that Ross Barkley was somebody he was going to really put faith in to really get a season moving forward straight away under him. Everton were looking very early in the season to get Barkley tied up to a new contract, and slowly but surely those talks kind of faded away as Ross Barkley's form also drifted, and Ronald Koeman no longer completely convinced about Ross Barkley. Now he came in and made a difference in midweek, but Ross Barkley himself now has a decision to make, because he hasn't signed his contract. He's got less than 2 years remaining. Tottenham, the first side to really sniff around. But, you know, in recent seasons, Man City, Man United, also been interested in Barkley. Obviously, the fact he's homegrown is a lure for the big teams. And I think for the first time, Barkley really had to consider actually moving on. I think Everton fans have been frustrated with him. I think that he's been built up to be a real big talent and doesn't show that often enough. I think with the right manager, he can do exactly that. I think he's a really, really good player, and I don't know if he'll leave in January. I'm never sure about those deals, because we see so few big players go in that market. But by the end of the season, Ross Barkley's going to have had to make a big decision about whether to stay at Everton and sign another deal, or whether to move on and try and enhance his career somewhere else. And it might just be a case that he's come to a crossroads now and thinks that it is actually time to move on.
Do you see that win against Arsenal as a turning point in Everton's season, or is that an anomaly and something that might not be replicated?
Yeah, I find it a bit hard to judge that win. I think that they were under so much pressure to perform and actually get a result, and you could sense it from the stands. There was almost an anger about them, about how Everton had been performing and the results they'd been picking up. And it found its way onto the pitch, and that was obviously important, because one thing that Everton have certainly lacked is fight. And I know that, you know, the likes of Tom Cleverley are people that have been accused of not showing enough of that. But it would have boosted morale because five games without a win and people were starting to worry, no less than Koeman. But even after a win against Arsenal, I wouldn't have thought they would be looking forward to playing Liverpool, who are so good going forward. And I just think there are still big questions for me about Everton's defence. You saw the week before against Watford when they conceded three goals that you're going to get opportunities against them, and that's one thing that you cannot allow Liverpool right now is opportunities in and around your penalty box.
And Liverpool are having to cope with the loss of Philip Coutinho and Daniel Sturridge, and Coutinho's loss has hampered them significantly recently, even though they did win on Wednesday night. Good performance on Wednesday night away from home against Middlesbrough, winning that game 3-0. What's the prediction here then?
I'm going to have to go Liverpool win. Yeah. I mean, when they're in full flow, it's difficult to stop them. I mean, again, Liverpool have just got this kind of brittleness about them that you wonder if they're going to turn the possession into goals, and if they don't, then are they going to collapse? I think the fact that Mignolet came back in midweek is quite significant. I would expect him to keep his spot. He had a good game against Middlesbrough. I think Loris Karius wasn't giving the rest of his side much confidence. I think that Klopp's obviously sensed that and decided to take him out of the firing line. You know, Bournemouth 4-3 defeat, West Ham 2-2 draw. Not good enough for a Liverpool side that really hope they can come at least close to putting together a title challenge. Back to winning ways, though, at Middlesbrough. Adam Lallana particularly is looking in superb form. And so they'll go to Everton just looking to score an early goal and then try and take them apart from there. So I think a 2-0 Liverpool win for me would be about right.
Were you surprised that Simon Mignolet came back in? Because Jurgen Klopp was staunch in his defence of Loris Karius when the Nevilles didn't attack him, but they questioned his goalkeeping ability. And Jurgen Klopp came out with some quotes that I bet angered Gary Neville. But he was really defensive. And then to bring Simon Mignolet in, was it him admitting that he'd maybe made a mistake?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one thing we don't know is how this has affected Karius mentally. I think that's one thing that they've looked at Liverpool and decided, okay, maybe we do just take him out for a game here. But that can have the adverse effect, whereas now Karius will just be left thinking about his last game, thinking about the Neville quotes. I know that often players don't think as much about these things as we'd like to believe that in the press that they do. But when you are left out the side and the last thing you remember is Gary Neville questioning you and your manager sticking up for you, but then you're out of the team, you're wondering if actually your manager does have this belief in you. I think he does. I think the fact that Klopp's stuck with him up to now, and he obviously brought him in, he's seen him play many, many times before at Man in Germany. So he knows what he's capable of. I think he's a good goalkeeper carrier, so clearly he's been struggling a bit, and it doesn't help when you're putting goal kicks out for a corner. So there's certainly been some concerns there. But I think until Mignolet messes up again, I don't see why you wouldn't just carry him with Mignolet for now.
Liverpool to win the game 2-0 is Dean's prediction, and that's available at 10-1, Liverpool to win that game 2-0. Dean, thank you for your company.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me.
If you want to follow Dean on Twitter, please do. @DeanJonesBR is Dean's Twitter handle. You can follow myself @DKellner. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to the FWA podcast for this weekend's Premier League action. Check out all the odds at williamhill.com. Just hit the football page and you'll see all the prices available there. And check out all William Hill's podcasts at audioboom.com by typing in William Hill. And if you're having a bet on the Premier League this weekend, very best of luck.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill.
Hey-o, let's go, let's go.
Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week on pre-match football accumulators with four or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops.